Nikki Lindgren, founder and managing partner at Pinnock, a paid media agency, discusses her background and her inspiration behind starting her agency. Nikki shares insights on the evolving landscape of paid media, including the impact of AI and machine learning on the industry. We've discussed the importance of a balanced approach between earned and owned media, and the need for a strong inbound strategy to boost ROAS. Nikki also provides recommendations for new brands starting out in 2024, including leveraging Amazon and Google Ads, as well as utilizing TikTok and Meta for brand awareness. She highlights the significance of creator-led content and the importance of education and third-party credibility in marketing campaigns. We've explored various aspects of digital marketing, including budget allocation, A/B testing, the impact of cookie deprecation, marketing efficiency ratios, attribution, and the future of the industry. Nikki also emphasizes the importance of middle-of-funnel placements like Amazon and Google for brands starting out, and the need to balance top-of-funnel and bottom-of-funnel campaigns. She shares her criteria for working with brands and offers career advice for those interested in the industry. It is an episode packed with digital marketing wisdom and best practices, so let's get started. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Nikki, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm excited to be here.
Great, Nikki. For the listeners who don't know you, maybe we start with who you are, your background, and what do you do at Pinnock?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the founder and managing partner at Pinnock, which is a paid media agency. We really help brands that are looking to scale their DTC business across beauty and lifestyle. So fashion brands and any kind of beauty brand is really who we help. Prior to starting Pinnock, which has been around for 4.5 years now, I was both in-house at DTC brands and agency side. So I really felt like my background and experience put me in a good position to know what brands needed when they were working with agencies. And so we just leaned in a little bit harder and had a little bit more of a seamless integration with in-house teams than I had experienced in the past. So that's a little bit of our secret sauce. And I think it's working okay. We have retained our clients on average for more than 2 years. So in the lane of paid media, that's a relatively high number. So it's something we're pretty excited about here at Pinnock.
So you have a history in fashion and lifestyle brands, obviously gained a lot of experience on the marketing side and working with external agencies. What inspired you to launch Pinnock? And again, as a female founder, what are some of the opportunities or challenges that you face?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, this goes all the way back to my beginning. So I'm actually from a small town in Minnesota called Pinnock, which is where the name of the agency came from. My dad was an entrepreneur. He had his own business. And so I think there was just something in me that always wanted to do something that connected me back to my roots, my family, and allowed me kind of the flexibility to run things the way I wanted to. So that's sort of how Pinnock came together. The timing of it was I was about to have my third child, and I was also laid off from a big, you know, tech startup here in the Bay. And so it just made sense to move on and start this journey of entrepreneurship at that time. And so that's kind of how the stars aligned in terms of timing. To be honest, I thought I was going to start a product business. I thought I was going to be one of those DTC players. So I did go down that route for a while. But I really feel like the reflection was, one, it's super difficult. And two, my passion is helping as many brands as I can at once grow their business. So it just felt like the natural next step to take.
Okay. So you mentioned Pinnock as a small town in Minnesota. How small?
Really small. I was just looking at the stats for what it's called. The population right now is 480 people. I only wish
480.
Yes. And I, you know, I grew up there a while ago. So I think
it's a while ago. So it grew, I don't know, it grew. So it was probably less than 300 or so. Something
yeah,
like that.
It's had a big increase in terms of population. But my nearest like high school and stuff was 9 miles away. And there were 25,000 people there. So it wasn't super rural. But the lake in my backyard was called Lindgren Lake. And that's my last name. My family's lived there.
Uh-huh.
the beginning of time, basically.
Nice. So now you're in the big city with your own agency. So that's a big change, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I've been in the San Francisco Bay Area now my whole adult life. So it's been a while.
Great. So why are you so passionate about marketing? Obviously, you focus a lot on paid media, on SEO, and helping brands. What inspired you to focus on this topic and why you're so passionate about it?
Yeah, well, my first job out of college here in the Bay Area was going to work for any kind of like lifestyle brand I could. And I wanted to be in fashion. I studied fashion, so I was super passionate about that. But back at those times, it was just Gap and Levi's here in the San Francisco Bay Area. So there wasn't very much to go with. So I went to Pottery Barn and I found my first job at Pottery Barn in inventory management. And I quickly learned that it was all about impressing upper management to move up the ranks. Like there just wasn't that much change in ebb and flow into how one did inventory management. And so while I was quite junior when I made this decision, I pivoted and I went to Cost Plus World Market and launched their e-commerce business with a handful of people. And that just suited my skills and my interests a little bit more because it was so fast paced. Tactics that we were doing one quarter weren't necessarily working the next quarter. And so that just piqued my interest to be like, this is ever evolving and changing. And that's really where the passion for digital marketing came from, is like learning that it's not stagnant. I don't have to perfect some dated system of management of inventory to move up in my career. So yeah, that was the premise. And my next job was agency side, where we helped, I think, 45 brands in a couple of years. And so seeing just the massive scale we were able to add to businesses was really exciting.
Nice. From your perspective throughout the years, how the paid media, and we can discuss, you know, social paid media and maybe Amazon as well, but from your perspective, how things are evolving throughout the years and what do you see now with 2024 is happening?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's a topic my team and I have to look into a lot, especially with AI and LLM coming in and just disrupting everything. We've pitched to a lot of brands who are saying, well, you guys are expensive compared to AI technology to run ads. And it's true. We do cost a lot more than an AI product. However, after they go test AI for a quarter or two, they're like, actually, this is not as developed or as robust as we need. So then they'll come back to us. Meaning to say there are going to be changes in the paid landscape right now. There are a lot of machine learning types of campaign setups to run, but we do believe it's still a time where a human is needed to be able to assess what's going on, strategize over changes, reflow budgets, a lot of components that maybe machine learning and AI can do better in the future. They're just not doing this particular year super well. So we'll continue to lean in and do those things. But every major platform is coming out with more and more machine learning based campaigns. So it's something we're really keeping an eye on to make sure we find different ways to serve the clients. And right now that's really in the lane of strategy related to creative and strategy related to landing pages.
I hear a lot of brands saying that ROAS is not that impressive as it used to be. Acquisition is very, very expensive. Are you familiar with those claims and what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, we work with about 20 to 25 brands at a time and they range in terms of efficiency. So we've got a couple brands that make about a 1.5x ROAS, which is really not that exciting, but it's a starting place and they've ebbed and flowed over the years. And then we have other brands that can get as high as an 8x. So it really does depend on, one, the maturity of the brand, the spend levels of the brand, and then how much they have a product market fit and, you know, what they're selling really resonates with their audience. We work in really saturated spaces. There's a ton of beauty brands out there. There's new ones popping up every day. And same with fashion. So it's, you know, what we get with one client in a particular quarter may not sustain for the rest of the year. And that's just something we have to strategize and be prepared to find a solution for.
So you mentioned between 1.5 to 8, right, on the ROAS. So let's talk about the 1.5 and let's talk about the 8. Maybe you start with the good news. What's good with the 8? I mean, what's happening on the 8? What they are doing correctly? There is some kind of patterns that you find that you can share with us?
Yeah, I think the brands that are getting the higher ROAS have figured out their whole marketing stack a little bit more. So how to do earned and owned media at a way that can sustain a part of the business. And so that's where things work out really well for us. They figure out how to do TikTok organic. They're working with creators. They're working with affiliates. They have a little bit of SEO happening. And then they're working with a PR firm or influencer agency to kind of figure out that earned portion of the business. So what we find are brands that can rely on owned and earned to drive, let's say, like 60% of the business, like doing paid efficiently is not that hard to do because everything that points to the brand is going to show surround sound of a great looking brand. The brands that struggle a little bit more are those startup brands that have lower funds, less awareness, and probably have never hired a PR agency, and are really in a crowded space where they have major players who are competing for the same market share they are. So that's to me like the first more obvious difference. And that's something we have to vet and work with our early stage founders on even before signing up with them, because we don't want to give them assumptions that they are going to hit an 8X when they might be a year and a half away from that.
Mm-hmm. So it's a big player's game, or there is a chance of also smaller startups. I mean, it needs to be highly differentiated, less crowded market.
Right? Yeah. I agree with both of those statements. And I don't think early entrepreneurs should necessarily be afraid of going into business this way. It's just like, how are they really going to have core competencies and authenticity that are going to differentiate them from everybody else? And as long as they've got a content plan for that, they should be pretty well suited to scale.
Yeah. So I'm hearing a lot from brands, and also, I mean, from the podcast guest and things that I read, that there is a lot of important for the paid media campaign to be successful, it needs to have also a very successful inbound strategy, right? So that's also, how do you see this, working together? Because brands who are just relying on paid ads to grow, I guess there is some underlying layer which is not probably, established correctly. So you need to have the right foundation for generating leads from organic resources and activities, but and also leverage that with paid media. Do you think so? Yeah. Or these are like 100%. Two different separate?
Yeah. And that's where I kind of spoke to the owned and earned media. So like, yeah. I would say when we're finding new brands, it's really, if they're relying on paid to drive more than 60% of their sales, and this is like Shopify sales, this isn't even necessarily mm-hmm. like paid media attributed sales, then it's a little bit risky for us because they're going to become so dependent and reliant on paid ads that it just puts the relationship in a huge strain at the start. We've worked with brands that just launched and like 95% of their sales have to come from paid. Well, if we can't get that paid media ROAS to be above like a 2-3X, they're not breaking even, which, you know, that's a whole nother conversation. Like, when should one break even? But, you know, there's a lot of pressure on the relationship. And so my team's been really, rightfully so, vocal with me to say, here is the criteria we need for a new brand for it to make sense for us, because otherwise we're going to work together for 6 months and the relationship will sunset because the brand hasn't done the other part. So it's better for me to spend time as the founder, like coaching the brand through how to do the inbound, how to do earned and owned. We're not going to do it for them. We're a paid agency, but having managed teams in the past, that can give them some ammo to go figure it out. And so that would be a better long-term strategy, is giving them a quarter or 6 months away from us or away from paid in general to go figure out how to do email, SMS, organic, social, SEO, and get a little bit more PR coverage.
Nice. So you mentioned there should be like a balance between paid and owned. Should be like a term when they work with you to make things structured and gaining the momentum. What other criteria you have in place to work with brands?
Yeah, I think another learning that my team has brought to me is because we do work with really early stage businesses that are just, you know, maybe 6 months in, maybe we're going go to market with them. Another thing we find is brands that don't have a marketing person and they want us to work directly with the founder generally are not taking the practice of marketing seriously enough to be a good fit for us. And so that's another thing we'll kind of look for. And I think for all the founders out there, marketing is going to be your mechanism and your vehicle to get sales. And so unless the owner is a marketer, I think it is really important, whether it's a fractional CMO or whomever, hire someone who can take all of that from you as a founder's plate and give you free time to do what your lane of excellence is.
So Nikki, what would be an ideal plan? I mean, for someone who wants to start, now, even for new founders or who has been working with a fractional CMO or they have a CMO in-house, want to launch marketing activities in a good combination of paid versus owned, what would be an ideal plan these days?
Yeah, in terms of how to stack that up.
Exactly. What are the major things that you see that are working both in inbound and paid media? And let's talk also maybe about Amazon as well, because setting up a Shopify store is very so easy today, right? And maybe some other technologies. But you know, getting acquisition and bringing new customers to that store is obviously very, very difficult these days versus maybe other platforms like TikTok or Amazon. So what will be your ideal plan for someone who's starting out in 2024?
Yeah, I think the first thing is for them to be hyper aware of who their target market is and where that person shows up. And so if that person, and I mean, I think everyone shops on Amazon pretty heavily. So unless for some reason that person would not be shopping on Amazon, setting up an Amazon storefront and running Amazon ads is probably going to be a newer business's highest return on ad spend, just because they've got a interested market who or audience that is on Amazon to buy a product just like theirs. So that would be the lowest hanging fruit. I know stacking up a whole new, a whole new account and everything on Amazon is not like just click a button. So there is some time involved there. The next place to go in terms of DTC sales specifically would be Google Ads. And the reason that I would go to Google Ads is not for search campaigns. It's for Performance Max, which is a type of campaign that allows ads to be shown throughout all of Google's properties. This includes YouTube, Google, or Gmail rather, like anything and everything in between, including search. So what we find with our brands is running Performance Max against even a brand term campaign. So it's basically branded search, but on Performance Max, generates a much stronger return on ad spend than just branded search, because people want to see and experience your brand in more of a visual platform too, or visual placement. So those would be the two lowest hanging fruit: Performance Max ads on Google and setting up probably sponsored and product ads on Amazon.
And Amazon.
Yeah. Then when we're kind of moving a little bit up funnel, because those, all of what we just talked about are people who are probably in market for a product just like yours. Then as we move a little bit more up funnel, TikTok has been okay at that. Meta is still okay at that. So those would be likely next places. By making it a little better than okay, a brand should be thinking through enabling shops on those platforms, meaning the customer can check out directly on TikTok or directly on Instagram. And unless you have a very considered product or a mature audience, we have seen shop always outperform, driving people to your Shopify store.
You mean that when they saw an ad or when they see an organic feed and they buy on TikTok versus, you know,
exactly,
bringing them back to Shopify, which is obviously a more complex process, right?
Yeah. So I think right now the ROAS on conversion on Shopify is 37% higher than the ROAS of driving people to your e-commerce store.
Wow.
But again, we've got a couple brands that have more mature audiences or a more considered purchase, and those will not necessarily do better with a shop integration on TikTok or Meta.
Yeah. Obviously, for TikTok, you need to have the right video content in place, right? So that's probably a different process, working with influencers, UGC, right?
Yeah.
How do you see this process? I mean, it's effective still today, or there are some planned changes in TikTok algorithm that will make it, again, very, very difficult for everyone?
Yeah, so creator-led content is always going to be the mechanism, and by always, I didn't actually mean always. I think like throughout most of 2024, I assume creator-generated content is going to be the way to go to execute types of hooks and angles. But the creators are leaning a little bit more heavily into like the education space. So if someone's just like, oh, I, you know, have found the perfect shade of lipstick or whatever it is, like that's just not enough. It has to talk about like the longevity of the wear of the lipstick or the ingredients that are beneficial for your skin, whatever it might be. So education is going to be at the forefront of everything creator generated. And then to me, creator content is not a hook. It's a delivery mechanism of a hook. So the hooks that work really well are us versus them. You don't have to name your competitors as them by name, but some sort of like blurred out experience of them. We find frequently asked questions work really well. So founders or marketing team members will make videos speaking at camera like we are today of what the answers are to the frequently asked questions. Third-party credibility always works. So that's where having the publicist and some PR mentions handy does help a lot. And then just really more lo-fi. Like we have ads that are people scrolling their Instagram account and looking at all of the comments within Instagram. And that seems to be working really well as a type of angle right now too.
Yeah. And those video are, you are referring that those videos will be created mostly for brand awareness, impressions, or you're specifically just, you know, talking about conversions and call to action for actual purchase. So these are two different things, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. They are. And it's getting blurrier and blurrier in that lane just because machine learning types of campaigns are both new and existing customers. So it's a little less clear these days. But the way a marketer should think through running a funnel these days is really on social platforms. So the first top of funnel is basically to get the video view. After someone's watched a percentage of the video, then you start to remarket to them. Just because there's going with the cookieless future, there's going to be less data going back and forth between Shopify and the e-commerce, Shopify and the social platform.
The social platforms, yes, yes. So I want to understand more about the creative process and the messaging process. Usually brands will come up with their own collateral and marketing stack and branding guidelines. And you might have a different view of things, right? How this process is working? How do you start this process of creative messaging in terms of
the... As much as we would love it to be one size fits all and here's the process and it works for all of our clients, it's very much not the reality.
Okay.
We've got a couple brands that have enough product drops that they kind of have their own POV on how they're going to come out and talk about each of their products. And that obviously makes our job a little bit easier than we're basically launching everything and then leaning into and relaying back to the client what parts of messages are working best. I think the first thing to pause on is the quantity of assets and the frequency of pushing them out. Because if you follow any of the major gurus on TikTok, they'll tell you everything from like 5 assets a week to 30 assets a week of net new content. And that's going to vary. I mean, 30 assets of content, like that's someone's part of someone's job, right? That's probably like 20 hours a week to even come up with. But the amount of assets are really going to depend on the budget and really kind of just the budget. So what we found is for about every $2,000 to $3,000 in spend, a new asset is needed. And so that's kind of how we'll back into with clients, how many they need. Now, the type of assets that need to be developed, we'll create a strategy with our brand. So we'll go out and look at their competitors, look at their historical data, and put together basically a creative brief for their designer or our designer to follow to hit on. But we've worked with a handful of brands that have been around long enough that they're not used to the amount of output of creative that's needed. So that's still kind of the hurdle, is getting the amount of assets. And so, for example, some of our brands that sit at like a 4 or 5X, they probably give us a new asset for every $7,000 in spend, where we would like them to give us a new asset for every $2,000 or $3,000 in spend, and they're still sustaining. So like, as much as we want to follow the gurus and say like you need 5 to 30 a week, like that's just not the reality of where a lot of brands are.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you implement some A/B testing, check a few things and then adapt during the way?
Yeah. Our A/B testing does change a little bit based on size of budget. So as best we can, we want to put all of our new assets into a new campaign so that they're kind of observed in a different environment than our business's usual scaling campaign, both of which target the same audience. But sometimes if the budget's small, it just makes sense to pile everything into one campaign.
Yeah. So how do you suggest brands to allocate their overall budget? So there is a minimum fee, I guess, for spend, right? Mm-hmm. That I'd love to know from you. So what's the strategy for allocation of these overall budget? How do you spread it across?
Yeah,
make the decision to spend in different channel.
Yeah. So for brands who are really just getting started, the first thing we want to do is get that middle of funnel. So people who are in market but probably don't know the brand by name is what I'm calling middle of funnel. And so those are going to be the placements like the Amazon and the Google. And so the idea would be if your budget is small, like let's say 10K a month, let's do the first two things we talked about a bit ago, Amazon and Google Performance Max first. Let's do a little bit of brand. And then let's see the opportunity to scale there. So as the budget becomes 13K, 15K, does that mean we now have enough budget to open up a Meta, or is there still room to continue spending efficiently on these channels? The long-term strategy is, of course, to move up funnel so that we're getting people who don't even know they have a problem or need something like the client is selling, but we want to get them comfortable with working with an agency first. And that's where we really lean into kind of what we call the middle of the funnel. What we never want to do is remarket 100% because that's mm-hmm. just a recipe for long-term disaster. Remarket in that case would be people who already know the brand by name or who have been to the website or follow the brand on social. Those people already know the brand. And so we could spend and get a really great return on ad spend there, but no one new knows about the product or the business.
So Nikki, obviously everyone discuss about cookie deprecation and its impact on the industry. And we know that Chrome is also going to shut down in the summer, cookies. So how is it impacting the overall industry and your work specifically?
Yeah, quite a bit. It's really disruptive. And one of the ways in which we're dealing with it in real time, and we have now for about 6 months, is making sure the clients understand MER, marketing efficiency ratio, is kind of like the main metric we're going to be going after and tracking against. And that's total e-commerce sales divided by spend. The reason that this is so important, while it does cover more than just paid, is for the reasons just mentioned. So like without a way to track on platform, we need to just make sure we can continue spending at a way that generates enough revenue for our clients. And that allows us even more flexibility than in the ROAS or CAC lane to think about what is top and bottom of funnel and how all these funnel positions kind of stack up and help the overall business. So while it seems a little unfair to count, MER is kind of our main KPI. It has given us a lot of freedom and flexibility to help scale businesses better than when our clients were fixated on ROAS.
And obviously you are looking at more first-party data platform, probably like Amazon or other retail media, or actually
provide
some first-party. Yeah,
exactly. So we are looking at more of the first-party data on Amazon. And then for attribution and some of the MMM stuff, we'll use a Northbeam or a Triple Whale with our clients, mm-hmm. Whichever one they've already kind of stacked up. And that will help us understand more of the creative components in terms of what really generated the sale.
Yes. So you mentioned marketing efficient ratio, MER, which I think is very important KPI. I want to elaborate more about that, if you can share some more information on that specific topic. I think it's important for our listeners.
Yeah. So again, the calculation for MER is total Shopify sales divided by media spend for the most part. Some people might calculate it a little differently, but that's at its simplest level what it is. And kind of what we're able to see then is, regardless of where everything's coming in, if it's owned or earned media or whatever else in between, we can see if their break even is a 3x MER and we can sustain a 5x MER, we can then tell the client in a future month, we're going to flip our media spend to be heavier top of funnel. and lower bottom of funnel, let's just say as an example. Then we can look at the next 14 days and say, has the MER changed? Yes or no? And kind of continue dialing in from there, because ultimately what this allows us to do is spend more against awareness, perhaps in the case where awareness pans out, and be less focused on direct response and still grow the client's business. Where in the past, if the client was like, well, everything needs a minimum of a 2x ROAS, top of funnel campaigns were probably not going to get us there. So they'd be like, pause top of funnel, let's only do middle and bottom. And so this is giving us the room to really work with the clients to scale their business instead of being super focused on paid efficiencies.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you can help us understand top of funnel, middle funnel, and lower funnel.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's important to define it correctly.
Yeah, so correctly in air quotes, because I think everyone kind of has their own way. But yeah. For us, top of funnel is really like a cold audience, likely someone who's never heard of your brand, maybe doesn't even know your category exists. And so it's that first touch with those types of customers. Middle would likely be anyone who's engaged with your assets top of funnel through a paid platform. And the best way to capture that would be if your top of funnel assets were video, because then we can say if you watched 50% of the video top of funnel, now you count as middle. Mm-hmm. And then bottom of funnel right now would be people who've been to the website but haven't converted, people who follow you on social but haven't converted. And so the, you know, all of these layers are getting a little bit more gray as time goes on, but that's how it's set up now. And directing marketers to really use first party data on the paid platform in terms of like building the funnel is going to be the way of the future.
Yeah. You mentioned previously triple whale, and I hear a lot of brands moving to triple whale, but overall about analytics, right, and data, how do you work today? How do you get this insight about what's really happening?
Yeah, so today we still lean on platform data, so like the Meta, Google, TikTok ads data directly. We rely on Shopify data to kind of show our source of truth. So a couple things we track every single week are, what is our MER? What are ROAS points by platform? And then what percentage of ads have come, or what percentage of sales rather have come from ads? And so we want to make sure that there aren't any major fluctuations in any of those to begin with. But beyond that, we are using Triple Whale or Northbeam to kind of stack up their whole marketing mix and see how each channel is working together and what weight each channel has for the business. At the higher level, and then at the lower level, we'll be looking at creative performance across different campaigns to figure out where to toggle more spend or, you know, build out new initiatives based on really great performing assets.
Yeah. And also attribution is quite challenging, right, these days. And it's very difficult sometimes to understand where this purchase came from and what's the actual journey that's happened behind the scene, right? Let's call it. Right. What are your thoughts on attribution? How do you see this evolving?
Yeah, I think like what my team's gotten really good at, because they're dealing with the clients day to day, is to what end do we care about this? Like, we'd never want to say to a client, like, that's fun to know, but we're not going to go pull that data for you. We would never say something like that. But it's like, to what end do we need to know what XYZ did for you? Because like, are we at a place where we consider not doing that anymore? Because the reality is the stack we're building together is likely the best way to scale. So we will start to look at those more granular components, but it's more of like a nice to have and a good understanding. Some of the things we care about a little bit more deeply right now are lag time. So from first touch to purchase, how many days is that? For many of our brands, it's already over 7 days. That's Meta's longest look back window, 7 days. So we can already explain to them like ROAS is severely understated on that particular platform. Another thing is touch point. So if we know it takes 7 different touches across 3 days to convert, then we can kind of speak to, okay, well, we have room for higher frequency of ad visibility across these initiatives because we know it takes people a while to convert. So those are the things that we're kind of looking into to build strategy, but we aren't, we're not really at a place where we need to look into like how anything deeper than that at this point, like how much.
And Nikki, what is your general overview in terms of where the market is going? I mean, what are your thoughts like on the macro level for the industry?
That's a great question, and I wish I had like a better prepared response. I think with all of the changes with pixeling and cookies, we are going to see, and the industry kind of is already showing us that, a return to connected TV, to audio ads. So I think, and we're doing this for some of our brands already, like increasing spend in those areas that are generally in the last couple of years / decades wasn't really a high priority because it was not driving return on ad spend. So we're seeing brands have a little bit more appetite for that, or digital out of home. And so I think we're going to have a little bit more flexibility to spend beyond just the major players. So I think that can be really exciting for businesses. And I think the simplification of some marketing metrics in terms of like just that MER again being a major component is going to be exciting to see. I mean, as I've said maybe two times already, like the industries we're in are pretty saturated. So I think we're going to see many of the players in the spaces probably sunset or find their way to exit.
Let's call it consolidation. Okay. It's a better term.
Thank you. Yeah. Consolidation. Yeah.
Consolidation. Yeah.
So those are kind of the major things. And then, you know, what we have to keep our eye on as an agency is what is happening in AI. We've been testing AI pretty much for the last 9 months, and we're trying to figure out if there's a way to augment what we do or if anyone's like a real big replacement of us. But right now our team is not impressed enough with what's out there that we've tested for AI. So we're not even using it to kind of augment some of our day-to-day tasks. Everything we do is still manual.
Great, Nikki. So for our listeners to understand better the type of companies or brands you want to work with, can you give us some of the, like, the criteria, like business volume, like revenues or media budgets per month? What are the, like, the minimum criteria that you're happy to work with, and where is your sweet spot?
Yeah, well, we do work with a lot of emerging businesses. So the lane that we work with best are beauty and lifestyle brands who are making $1 million a year in top line revenue and are spending roughly $20,000 to $30,000 minimum a month in media spend. And we will stack them up on anything digital ads related, pointing to e-commerce store or Amazon, as we talked about briefly. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of our sweet spot. We work with brands all the way through probably 50 million, but at that point, they're ready to kind of bring their efforts in-house, and we're usually onboarding their in-house team at that point.
Yeah. And for professionals who want to start their journey in the industry or even want to move to marketing side, what are some of the career lessons that you can share with us?
Oh, man. I mean, I think going back to inventory management, my past career path versus marketing, it's, you know, if you like the fast pace of things changing all of the time, you know, you're going to be in a really great place with digital. So I think people who have that appetite towards like the changing ethos of an environment, like this is perfect. Beyond that, I mean, so many of the resources nowadays are online. So I think one can become really educated quickly. And I think there's a ton of opportunity to just go out there and start helping brands, even if it's pro bono to start with, to get some of their sea legs prepared to join agency or join an in-house team.
Yeah. Great, Nikki. We are here now with the fun fact part of the episode, right? So we would love to learn something more about your personal life that most of your professional network are not aware of.
Sure. Well, I did let you know that I am a bit of a soccer mom, so I have three small kids. So a lot of my free time is just schlepping the kids around from activity to activity. But beyond that, I did just sign up for my first half marathon in probably 15 years. I'll be running the San Francisco half marathon this summer.
Wow.
And then I joined an aerial skills class where we're learning how to climb up silks and, lots of upper body strength. So, Eitan, your questionnaire actually inspired me to go out and find some new hobbies. So I appreciate
the question. Okay, great. I was not aware that I'm going to influence, you know, hobbies of our guests. So, but it's always great to hear. So well done. Well done.
Thank you.
All the good luck. Nikki, anything else you want to add?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I really appreciate the time today. People can find our website and a little bit more about us at pennock.co. We are not a .com, but you can find us at .co.
Great. And we will have all the details in the show notes.
Wonderful.
Great, Nikki. I appreciate the time. Wish you amazing 2024.
Thank you. You as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimy, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimy.net to learn more. It's Vimy, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.